Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to another reality show. I'm your host, Golden Hawk, and I have a wonderful show planned for this evening because, you know, when I'm a very passionate person, and the people in my life and the people that have been following me through radio know that my whole goal for doing my radio show and for communicating through radio is to help people experience life from a new perspective, maybe a more open, a more out-of-the-box perspective. Well, boy, did I deliver tonight, guys. I really delivered. I am so excited. I have wonderful things. Everybody knows the Almeen Pod, September 11th through the 13th, New York City, www.almeeninnewyork.com for more information to register for that New York event. And at some point, probably in about an hour, we'll play the promo and give me and my guest a moment to just take a breath. But we're going to get right into this because I'm extremely excited about tonight's guest. So tonight, you're going to meet Saskia Roel, a modern-day spiritual adventurer who, along with her husband and five young children, sold her home in Holland, gave up a thriving career, and took a daring leap of faith to explore the possibilities of a brand new life in the United States. Now get this, no money, no job, five kids who don't speak a word of English, and Saskia meets the challenge head on. With an unwavering trust, Saskia transformed her dream into the extraordinary life she and her family live today. And we're going to speak on that tonight. Welcome to the show, Saskia.
Thank you, Golden. I'm so delighted to be here.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you here because you literally have lived a life that is comparable to like a James Bond.
It's so funny you say that because I had people here and they say, you know what, I think you have an Indiana Jones life.
Exactly. I mean, when someone says adventurer, I mean, Saskia, I am truly, truly, my hat's off to you because I too am an adventurer. And boy, I stand in your shadow, my friend, because you have gone into other cultures, other countries. Okay, there's so much to tell. And you know what else I loved? And I have to say this. I'm a very casual person when it comes to the show, so it's all casual. But I want you to know that I love the way you wrote the book. By the way, Saskia's journey is written, at least the first part of her journey, is a book written called The Suitcase Full of Faith. And I've been tweeting about this for the last couple of weeks. Saskia sent me the book and thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's a wonderful read. But one of the things I noticed, Saskia, which I'm really impressed with, is you don't write the book in linear time. Like it doesn't have the beginning, an end, a middle, and an end.
Right.
You jump back and forth in time. Saskia, that's the way I tell stories.
You know, and it's true. And the way I wrote it, I truly wrote it from my soul, and that was not linear. And in the end, everything made sense because it came full circle. And actually, the end of the book first was the beginning. And when I put the book together, I changed everything around. But
really?
There's a flashback. I start with the book, and I give you a taste, and then I flashback through my life, and then it comes back to the beginning.
Absolutely.
And basically, that's how life is. I mean, life and death, and the beginning and the end, it's just one circle. And it's fascinating you say that, because I've never, ever heard anyone tell me this, but it's true.
Yeah,
it's
not linear, and it's where most people who are experiencing life multidimensionally, we're mostly labeled ADD or ADHD. Mm. Your your book addresses that sort of adrenaline and way of processing life beautifully.
Yeah.
Beautifully. It really is the spoken word of the soul. I can feel it. It's
true, Goldie. It's written in a rush. It's like a birth. And I think that's why people start the book. And that's the one thing I hear everybody tell me, if it's an old lady of 96 or if it's a teenager of 18 or 19, everybody reads the book in one go. And at first I didn't understand it. And then somebody else said, yeah, but the way you wrote it, I mean, I wrote it in 21 days and every day I sat down in the morning from 4 till 6 and it was a rush. It was like how you birth. Actually, I birthed in the same way my baby. It's like, it's that birth. Like there was unstoppable energy and my soul was on the run with me. All these stories had to come out and that's the energy, probably what you voice so beautifully. It's adrenaline.
It is, because it's exactly, I mean, it's so true. When I read the stories, I mean, I was feeling your feet in Egypt. I was feeling the sores. There was times you spoke about the warmth of the sun or the moisture, and it's like, I mean, and I realize you can get caught up in every book, but when I got caught up in your book, it was genuinely being caught up in your soul.
Yeah.
And there is a meeting in that space. There are certain things that are happening to me. Everything synchronistically that happens to you in the book, as I'm reading the book, synchronicities are happening to me. And it is such an exquisite space to, I really want to tag this point tonight about the willingness to trust that voice when, you know, essentially your inner circle or the people around you who love you dearly are going to look at you when you make a certain choice based on the soul and go, what are you doing? You know, meaning it makes no logic to the outside world, and yet every fiber of your being just knows it must be made. That choice must be made.
That's exactly. I mean, sometimes I say there is only one choice, or I can only listen to that one voice. That's the voice of my soul. And it doesn't make sense for the outer world because it's not logic. It isn't logic. When we left, and we left everything behind to go to America, because deep in my heart, I heard my soul say, it's time to go, let go of everything and go. And we had a wonderful life. It was absolutely abundant. I mean, we'd worked hard. I finally gave birth to all my 5 children. I had my practice running. My husband started his new business, and I heard go. And we left everything behind, and everybody around us also said it's irresponsible. How can you do this? You burn all your bridges. You sell your house. You have no jobs waiting. You don't speak the language.
Yeah.
You don't even know where you're going. Well, we know where we're going to live as this dot on the map, but that was all we knew. But it was enough. We brought that suitcase full of faith, and that's actually how the title came about. Somebody asked me where the title came from, and that was from one of those moments a friend of us asked us, oh, I mean, how can you do this? You have no safety net. You must bring a suitcase full of money. I said, no, a suitcase full of faith. That was all we brought.
And it is really, in my personal opinion, so much more valuable than a suitcase full of money.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the culture right now seems so bent that if they didn't have money, that life would stop as they know it. You know, there's
you're not happier. I mean, I work with top people on CEOs of really high up companies, and they have a suitcase full of money, but are they happy? No, they aren't fulfilled. And I think that's what's happening now. People really look at their life like, I'm at this crossroad. Do I still follow the threaded path that's overgrown with weed, but it's really a flat road?
Right.
I have a suitcase full of money with me. Or do I go the unthreaded path where you don't know where you're going, but you follow your heart's lead. That's way more adventurous and fulfilling in the end.
And it really is. The fulfilling is, I mean, folks, I can't even tell you. The book is so fabulous. Okay, I'm just going to start kind of like just from memory. I mean, I have the book in front of me, but these are like moments that in the book that really touched me because I can remember a time, I'm 44 now, and I can remember a time saying, I would not travel until I was married. Now, the funny part about that is I'm 44 and I'm still not married. And so as I'm reading your book, and of course I have done some traveling, not to the extent that you have, but I'm reading Saskia's book, folks, and she literally looks in the paper and goes, okay, what country am I going to, and in the least expensive way that I can get there?
As many stopovers as you can.
And everything that most people avoid, Saskia has a radar for it. And it's like, you know, I definitely want to share stories, but where does that courage come from?
I think, Goli, that courage, I love the word courage because it means the word cœur, the French word cœur, heart is in it.
Oh,
my heart was in it. And the heart isn't fearful. The heart is full of joy and faith and trust. And I just followed that path. And as soon as I had some money, I would look in the newspaper and think, oh, Abidjan, where's Abidjan? I never heard of Abidjan. And Abidjan, I look on the map, it's Ivory Coast in Africa. I thought, ooh, that sounds pretty delicious. So that's a cheap ticket. And let me see, how many stopovers? Well, usually you want to avoid stopovers if you're a little older. And I'm like, oh, good, stops over here, stops over there, yes. Perfect, 4 stopovers, and the longer they last, the better. So I would go, and I had no fear. I had no fear. I had total trust that wherever I would go, I was fine, I was safe. And interesting enough is later on, I tried to figure out how did I do it? I mean, was I born with a lot of faith?
Right, right. Good question.
Maybe so. You know, maybe so, but it's also everything you become good at, you train. It's like you build a muscle, right? Well,
yeah.
When you want to have muscles, you go to the fitness club and build them, even if you're born with a lot of muscles. So what I did, I traced it back, and I could see from when I was very, very young, I think 4 or 5 years old already, I would kind of dare the universe, or God, however you want to call it, higher power, I would dare the universe, and I would know, I would hear, okay, Saskia, do this. I could hear that in my heart, in my soul.
Wow.
And I would say, okay, I will. But you guys keep me safe. You figure it out. I'll do it, but I trust that you help me. You support me. And I was proven right time after time, so I didn't have any doubt anymore. I mean, it always worked.
Well, can I interrupt?
That's how. Yeah,
okay.
Sure.
Give some examples of some of the things you would do young, so the parents that are listening might not be so much. You know, it's like I see parents from being a nanny wanting to protect their children, thinking that that's my duty as a parent to protect my child. When I think, you know, the soul to soul.
Yeah.
Promise we make these beings that come through us is to give us as much room as we can to grow.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, can you help me put that into words?
Yeah. Well, it's beautiful you say that or make that point, because the thing is, here's also a difference. I'm Dutch. Well, everybody can hear that, I'm sure.
Right.
But in Europe, and I think I was also very blessed to have parents who had total trust and faith in me and thought that I was safe anywhere I went anyway.
Okay.
But next to that, culturally, it's also, there's not so much fear. When we came here with the 5 kids, I have deep trust in my kids that they have their own inner guidance that they have that divine part in them
yes.
that helps and supports and protects them, so I don't have to hover over them everywhere they go. And I give them a lot of freedom, and we talk about it. I trust that they make good choices as well. So I build their trust because I trust them. And, I mean, if it doesn't work, of course, you're called back. But also, in when I was young, for example, I was 13 years old. And somehow I was at that inner guidance to feel like what's good for me or not, and was kind of this wiser part, my soul hovering over me, and I learned to listen to that. And I knew I was in a very big school, and that the part of me said, would be better if you go to a very small school. So I go to my parents and I said, I think it's better for me to go to a small school. Well, here I am, 12, 13-year-old kid, saying that I should go to a smaller school. So my parents said, oh, well, yeah, if you think that's right, you do it. You call the school, arrange it, and go for it. So,
right.
Yes, I did that. And I switched schools. Of course, the first day of school, you're standing there in a new year thinking, ooh, was that a good choice? So I learned to follow my own compass inside. Plus, my parents deeply trusted that I was good, that I was safe, and I knew that I was.
Yeah.
And I see it here in America that my kids, I want to raise them in independence. So it's not always mommy and daddy, you know,
yes.
hovering over you, and build that trust they have in themselves, and that they can do anything they want, and that they can go after any dream. And fair enough, I have two kids now who have taken, my daughter, well, now she's only 17, she takes an enormous leap and goes off to Holland, where, I mean, she still speaks Dutch, but she can't write the language as she's
right.
going to study. She doesn't know anyone in Amsterdam, and everything is new, and she's doing it. And my son did it last year, and it really pays off to build that trust.
It is such a priceless gift, because it really is the gift of the soul, not the personality.
Yeah.
You know, it will enhance the personality. The personality clearly goes with it, but it's like these are parenting skills that are soul-based.
Soul-based, and you cannot emphasize enough to your kids. And my kids have examples that you know, prove them right or wrong. Like,
of course,
I tell them, you know,
yes.
okay, you gotta, you know, my son the other day made a little mistake. He shouldn't go into the woods, and he heard that voice inside of him. He should not go there. He's a teenager.
Okay.
And he said, I did, Mom, and guess what? 10 minutes later, the police is there.
Okay.
They shouldn't go there. And he said, now forever, ever, ever, I know, because I raised them in that way, listen to that voice.
Absolutely.
Always true. Your instinct, we can call it intuition. It doesn't matter how you call it.
Agreed.
We all have that.
Yeah.
Everybody has it, but we don't know how to rely on it anymore.
Well,
it's our radar, right? Our inborn radar to stay safe.
Very much so. But if it is not nurtured from, well, let's forget if it's not. If it is nurtured from a young age, I mean, there is no greater guardian than the guardian of self-intuitive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, the parents that are overshadowing their children, and I know this, I've been a nanny for 17 years, and what they will tell me, you know, what I've been told, like, to be a good nanny, you have to literally stand over my children 24 hours a day. And I kind of say, yes, 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 and then they go out, and I kind of parent from a very soul-based, or I
yeah.
nurture from a soul-based, and the parents go to me, you know, the kids run up to me when I come to the house. I mean, and it's not because I give them the freedom to choose, which I do, but I am always saying to them, what are you feeling? Trust what you're feeling.
Exactly.
Open up to what you're feeling. Get your senses going. They never, you know, the parents are always like, my kids, I don't want them watching TV. And it's like, well, we're not watching TV. I'm out there talking to the trees and the wind. And I'm out there teaching them things that are very shamanic and intuitive. And blessed be, right now I have two families that know who I am, adore me. You know, in other words, it's very copacetic, the people that I work with now. But in my career, I have seen people that, you know, like, you need to hover over my child. And I'm like, no, your child needs to, if he falls down, he's going to be okay. He's going to learn. You know, they want to protect.
I so agree.
Them. Yeah.
I so agree. It's so overprotective. And I see it, my daughter, I see it in all my kids. I give them full freedom because I know that they can handle it. And they had that from young age. And now in America, we look at pictures from when we still lived in Holland, and they're on the bike, and they have this rucksack, and they said, oh, yeah, we were going survivaling, you know, on the survival tour. And they were 6 and 7 years old, and I let them go. They're fine.
Yes.
Here, you know, it would be unthinkable.
That's very interesting. Culturally speaking, I know for a fact, culturally speaking, the way my mother raised me, which was very similar to the way you're raising your children or have raised them, it's considered abuse because there's just this whole very hypersensitive that we have to police, so to speak, our children.
I see the example in front of me. When we came here, you know, for a vacation, just to sense into if we would like America, when I had that first idea, maybe we should move the whole family here. I'm with five kids, and the youngest is 1.5. So he's in Australia. Then we have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, and an 8-year-old, or somewhat of those ages. So they were raised in kind of freedom and like talking to people and be very open. So they go off in all directions and everybody is freaking out. And I'm even freaking out then because all of a sudden I'm like, well, if it's all, maybe there is a lot of danger here. But it was very tough. Coming here, we've traveled a lot with the kids in Europe and they're very free-spirited, so they weren't used to just all, you know, walk in a row of five. They didn't know that.
Exactly. Well, I can't tell you, from a personal standpoint, I'm so glad that you did transfer your family here, because I think the United States, anyways, which is the only country I've ever lived in, I do believe we're ready to experience that freedom, because it's a freedom of conscious choice. We don't have to be on red alert. Like I tell my friends all the time, freedom and safety, I don't even say freedom, actually, safety is a state of being, not a place.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, because I have worked in million-dollar homes in these incredible communities, and the parents would say to me, lock the doors, there's been a rash of kidnappings. And I swear to God, Saskia, I would look at them and go, are you kidding me? And they're like, I want you, if you're inside the house, I want the doors locked. And
we don't even have keys. I have no keys of the house, not of the front or the back. We have no keys since we live here. We have no keys. There are no keys. I truly believe, like, a house with seven locks attracts seven thieves.
Of course.
And, you know, take whatever you like here, but
it's stuff, and that's what it is. They get possessive of even though, I mean, within a week, I gave notice with that family. I happened to be working full-time, and that was the last full-time. Because, you know what I said? I go, they're going to create something, and it's not going to be on my shift.
No.
Because that's what they're creating. They're creating, you can feel the energy building up, like, this is, all of life's a stage. I mean, what do you want to play? Whatever you want to play, the universe will support.
It will support. We had these neighbors in Holland, the two houses next to us, and she had this, I never forget, she had this blue car, and we had a white car. And, of course, we didn't lock our car there. And I mean, you should, but we didn't lock our car.
Right.
And she had her car, and it was stolen 4 times, Goldie. That car got stolen every other week, and it was locked with double alarms, and I don't know how they did it. It was so.
No, indeed. just because to support that, I lived on the bottom floor of a two-family house. I never locked my doors because I said I wanted to be a living example that safety was a state of being, not a place. Upstairs got robbed 3 times. I did actually get robbed once, much, much later, and I knew it was coming, and I just told my friend, just he was actually house-sitting, and I said, just make sure you're safe. It, you know, it's stuff. Don't worry about it. And nothing got broke. You know, they came in, they took stuff, and my friend came in and interrupted. But the truth of the matter is, because my friends were like, now are you going to start locking your doors now that you got robbed? And I was like, no. No, it's like something, because my friend kept saying, Goldie, I think I brought that to your house because I would be afraid that your doors were unlocked.
Hmm.
And so whatever it is, I go, it's stuff. We'll buy more. We won't buy more. I can live without, you know, a stereo. You know, I'll tap my own drumming. I've lived in a very wealthy area and have never been attached to things.
No, that's a beautiful state of being.
Yeah, it's true freedom. It's true freedom.
But you will also, I mean, to talk about safety, I mean, it sounds I'm totally fearless, but I had to give up a fear when I came here and 9/11, and I write about it. 9/11 came. You probably read that piece where Seep left. My husband left with the first plane out. I was devastated, thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen now? All of a sudden, there was this big fear triggered in me that the whole country would go to war, and we had just moved all our family here, and I'm here in this big old Victorian house with no locks, and I saw terrorists in every corner all of a sudden. I felt like this lion mom, like protecting her cubs, and I didn't know how to do it, and so interesting. I never forget. Steve left. I'm here with all the kids. I have no idea actually what to do when you know, whatever is going to happen in this country.
Right.
And the house is still empty. Well, first of all, what I did was I want to collect the passports. So if we had to run or fly out, I had them.
Right.
Amazing, amazing. The house is empty. I have this box. And I thought, just make sure the passports are there. There's not 6 passports, there's 5 passports in this box. And I count again, and I count again, and mine's gone. Mine's gone.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable.
You're just triggering the fear. Yeah, yeah.
I it wasn't there, so I knew I had to say, okay, I'm not running away from this fear. I am here.
Right.
So anyway, to talk about the other fear I had was this big house, and I thought, okay, let's count all the places where you can come into this house, because we have these old windows, you can just push them open and you step inside. I think there were 32 or 36 places where you could just come in the house.
Right.
So I walked deliberately along all those places, and I faced my fear in such a big way, and I really know that this is a way to face your fear and let it go. And the fear was so overwhelming, the fear was so big, that it was bigger than me. And I took a very deep breath that night, and I thought, I prayed to the angels, you know, let them take them what they take. We'll be safe, and I give up this fear. And actually, I did it, and it was gone. It was completely gone. And I never felt like, I mean, inside I can lock the door, but I never felt I even had to do that.
Yeah,
it was pretty amazing.
And
then later on, that passport got back as soon as I declared, I'm not leaving, I'm not running away. Miraculously, 3 weeks later, there's
six passports. Right. See, and I love the way your book really, folks, you got to hear the stories. I mean, all right, let's tell one of the stories. Okay, you've decided you're coming to America, you, your husband, and your 5 children. Now, normally, it takes, what they said, 3 years for a visa to come through? Is that like that? Or 3 months?
No, well, normally, it takes, when you apply, actually, and we luckily, we are here now 8 years, and I know how the immigration works now. Anyway, when we applied, we were moving in July, and we applied for the visa in April. My husband thought, oh, that's just, you know, something like you buy a train ticket or something. Well,
right,
anyway,
right.
Luckily all that belief helped. So then he applied for a one-year visa. And, yeah, so we sold our house, gave up everything. I thought, we go for a one-year visa. We trust that then after we can, you know, renew it. And the visa, interesting enough, you know, that takes a while for them to process it. But we had already booked the tickets for the plane. All our stuff was already on the boat. So the house was completely empty. We're now in the end of June, right? We still have no visa.
Right.
Everything's gone on the boat. We live on blankets in the house. And our party is planned for July 1st, goodbye party. And we're flying out on July 6th, I think, end of June. And we weren't worried a bit. I mean, looking back, I'm even a little bit amazed, but probably because I know more about the immigration now.
Right.
Everybody could say, what about the visa? What about the visa? And we said, we're going. I mean, there was no doubt in my mind. We're going, and, you know, that will come. Anyway, end of June, the visa comes, and instead of a one-year visa, which we had applied for, we got a three-year visa.
Yeah.
The lawyer was astounded, like, well, you know, of course we needed actually a three-year visa. And a one-year, because you have to prove you can make it, you earn money. I mean,
okay,
we got a
okay.
three-year visa.
Right.
It was amazing, amazing. That helped a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, and there are stories like this literally over and over, page after page, where, you know, you really do personify, I'll jump and trust my wings will secure me, you know, to wherever I need to land.
Yeah, the parachute will open.
I mean, and you know, it's like, we're not just talking about Saskia, and we're not just even talking about her and her husband. I mean, you're also jumping with five kids.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you how many Americans that I know that say, I can't do this because I gotta stay at this job for my kids. I have to make it for, and I'll say to them, well, isn't the message you're giving your kids to enslave yourself and have no joy in your life? what are you telling your kids? Why don't you be a living example of passion and life, not
and the kids know, you know, I said to the oldest one when he was going to Holland last year, I said, you know what, if you made it here, what we did is you settled for a whole new life. You didn't speak a word of English. He entered middle school. Can you imagine? I mean, now I'm also horrified I know more about middle school. Oh,
it's a tough
word. He didn't even know where to go. He couldn't even read the math, because then it would say expect or subtract or God knows what. They did it. I said, if you do it here, then you can do it anywhere. You have that trust and faith in you. And people would ask us, what if it's not succeeding, this mission? And we thought, it succeeds anyway, because we give the example, you can do this. Go after your dreams. Live a passionate life. Go for it. I mean, what can go wrong? Maybe after a year we have to go back. Well, then we've had a phenomenal year, and we'll start over.
There you
We're
go.
We're fine.
I think, indeed, it's there's no fear of failure within the experience of your book. And whether it does or – I mean, because she – you did have a couple of experiences that were kind of interesting. Iran?
Oh, well, I mean, it's not that. I mean, definitely, because I make extraordinary choices.
Exactly.
Inevitably have extraordinary challenges and difficulties, but also extraordinary life and results. I mean, that's all related to each other.
Yeah, it is. It really, and I bring that up in honor, because, you know, I'll be honest with you, the places you've been to, I want to go to, like Egypt and Africa, and, you know, I'm a scaredy cat. Are you kidding me? Up until, like, about 4 or 5 years ago, I was still saying, I'm not going to, well, no, a little more than that. Actually, about 6 or 7 years ago, I was saying to myself, I'm not going to travel unless I'm married. And I laugh now going, I'm 44. There's a good chance at this point I'll never marry. And I don't feel any loss because of that. I don't need personally to get married. I would love to find, you know, I would love to find my SIB. I mean, I'm down with that. I just, you know, it's like the whole institute of marriage from a United States point of view, it's like, I don't need to commercialize my bond with a human being. I just need to
have a soulmate. I mean,
there
you go.
Yes.
But what place did you? You said Indonesia, maybe, or something with an I. No, Iraq. I didn't go.
Or Iran, or where was when the men were like really just.
Oh, that was in Egypt when I was.
Oh, Egypt.
And I had this long blonde hair and wearing shorts. I mean, how
stand out she is.
God, in this Arab country, and that. I mean, of course, I have nothing against Arab, but at that time, definitely the Arabic men were, you know, I was there, this blonde, long-haired girl.
Yeah.
And I was with two or three guys, and people have asked me who read the book, why didn't those guys help you or protect you? But they were so involved in their own world. They thought I was their buddy. They didn't even look at me like we have to help or protect her. But what was very dangerous in Egypt, that was the Shah of Persia, as he was called then, was buried, and we were so happy we could be at the funeral. So we thought, oh wow, that's phenomenal. So early in the morning, we hear all these prayers and sounds, and they were going to come with a coffin through this big plaza. So everybody gathered there. What I, of course, didn't know, I never studied, like, you know, how that would be.
What the culture is, right.
No, I lived in Israel then, and I traveled to Egypt. I was very curious to discover it by being there. And I'm in the middle of thousands of men, this crowd, they were wild. And I'm there, this blonde girl. So they thought Allah had heard their prayers. this blonde goddess in the middle of this crowd, and they raped, you know, you could call it rape. They touched me. They kind of raped me, and there were thousands pressing their bodies against me, and I was just bait. It was absolutely horrible. It was very, very difficult. But then again, I mean, I tried to get out. There was no way I could get out. And they were screaming and wild and oh, it was awful. But then somehow, all of a sudden, I'm lifted out of the crowd. And somebody puts me on a TV wagon, you know, high above the crowd.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I was there at least for, I'm sure, an hour or maybe 2 hours in that crowd fighting with these men. Which is absolutely the worst. So yes, but yes, I did see the Shah, which I really liked.
Yeah, I love your optimism, Saskia. It's awesome. I mean, you really do have, you know, very much Indiana Jones, you know, that whole, you have lived many lives.
Yeah.
In this one body, and I am loving the idea that your children truly, I mean, it's not like you're living those lives and then as a parent, you know, I don't mean to keep coming back to it. It's just I have two passions in life, a few passions, but my two largest passions are communicating spiritual principles and acknowledging the children that they are the masters and that these are not just small beings. These are truly, truly incredible, wise. I mean, the children coming into the planet today are just incredibly sensitive and in-tuned. And you know, the parenting is counterintuitive to what the children already know because of, you know, statements like they should be seen and not heard, statements of, you know, you'll do this because I say so. It's like, well, what kind of nonsense is this? And, of course, everybody always says to me, Goldie, you don't have kids. It would be different if you had your own. And I'm going, oh, please, universe, just give me one so I can show them I wouldn't be different with this. Yeah. I mean, I really, my mom raised me very, very similar to the way your mom raised you. I mean, the way you're raising your children. I guess the way your mom raised you. I mean, we tend to pass on the faith because it's all we know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, I made mistakes, but I don't look at my mistakes as failures. I look at my mistakes as what made me strong enough to get through the next level of life.
Yeah, what I love in raising the children is that you keep emphasizing their gifts and their uniqueness. Like,
yeah.
We all have a heart song. We all have that uniqueness, that unique song. And instead of saying, oh, you're a bad boy, you would say, oh, but you have such a big heart. So that choice you made, that isn't really you. And
wow.
Then they feel so acknowledged in who they are.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's this beautiful story about this African tribe. And this African tribe knows that we all have a heart song. And when a woman is pregnant, they go out into the wilderness. And with a few women, they tune into the heart song of the baby. And when they know it, they sing it out loud and they come back to the tribe. And I see it as they say that sing the song as like, what is that uniqueness of the child? So then they sing the song to the whole tribe. So the whole tribe knows what this baby is about. Like, what is so specific about this little child?
Wow.
So when the child is born, they sing the song to the child. But what's so interesting is when the child marries, they sing the song again. When in the end, the child or the person dies, they sing that song again.
Right.
So that
right.
last song. But the most interesting part here is when there is behavior that's not tolerated, or the child acts really badly, they put it in the circle and they sing the song again to the child. So you remember the child to get in tune with their own song. And I practice that with my children, and it really works. Instead of saying, oh, you're bad, you're this, you're that. Yeah, of course, they shouldn't behave a certain way. But remember them who they are. That's way more powerful.
Woo! I love you, Saskia. and it's living proof that everybody thrives on being reminded of that which we
are.
Yeah,
and we are. A true friend is really who reminds you of your song. You know, when you're out of tune, literally, it says you're out of tune or you're out of sync. We are sometimes out of tune. I can be out of tune. And when somebody remembers, you know, I can sometimes can't find my faith. And then somebody says, well, are you saying this? I said, you have a suitcase full of faith. And I'm like, yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah, of course. You know?
It's a tough thing when you write a book. You're going to have to definitely always carry that suitcase.
That suitcase full of faith, yeah, you know, that's stuck with me now.
Yeah, no.
And it's a good thing. And I get my challenges.
Thing. Yeah.
I think, you know, the universe heard me. Oh, you're the faith lady. Well, here you go. I mean, I have my challenges, believe me.
Well, I mean, read the book, Suitcase Full of Faith. Extraordinary. I mean, you know, one of the things I also like about your story, which is, again, I don't see in a lot of people that I know, is that you don't look at challenge as a negative. You know, in other words, I mean, when you traveled to three or four of the countries that you went to, if not all of them, you had nothing more than, you know, what was it, a white sack with, you know, a couple of t-shirts,
yeah.
a pair of pants,
yeah.
and half the time you didn't even have shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know people that won't go to the grocery store. I mean, they got to have more things, you know, on them in their person. It's like...
That's so funny.
It's
true. I just laughed because my daughter left for a trip, and she's lived here now for 8 years, so it's so good that she gets a taste of real life when she goes back to Holland. She's
right.
going to the Berkshires for 3 days. What she packs? I said, I'll have your wardrobe with you.
Right, right. That is very common. You know, it's so funny because, I mean, it's part of the culture, and I get that... the way Osho, I don't know if you've heard of Osho. Did you mention Osho in the book? I don't remember.
No, I mentioned Sai Baba.
Sai Baba,
Osho,
okay.
But
okay.
Probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and part of his, you know, America has clearly something to offer as the outer experience, and like India has the inner experience, and what we need to do is blend the two. It's not about eliminating either experience, but let's spiritualize matter. And so it's just been a very, you know, interesting journey from my perspective. I've only lived in America, and you know, it's, you've gone to some of the most spiritual places on earth. I mean, your story about your Israel experiences.
That was phenomenal, yeah.
I mean, because what was the kibbutz? No, what was the place
where...
Yeah,
I lived on a kibbutz, and that's... I don't think they have the kibbutzim anymore. The kibbutz is kind of a little village, agricultural village, which is completely self-supporting. So they have... they make their own food. They have their own, basically they completely support themselves.
Okay.
And it's a very tough life
because
they're, you know, the moms and the dads, they work whole day, and then the children live in children's houses there. I mean, that was really at the beginning. It was a very idealistic group of people who formed the kibbutzim. And as you were called a volunteer from different countries, all people gathered, and you could go there. You wouldn't earn anything, but you would earn your roof.
Your place to be there, right.
Yeah, and I found it fascinating. The moment I set foot in Israel, and so I had this deep calling of going to Israel, and I thought, I'm not going to the kibbutz for 3 months, because most people did that. I thought, 3 months is like an extended vacation. You know, you can, you know, for 3 months you can do anything. I thought, let's go a year.
Wow.
And stay there a year so I really can experience what it is.
Yeah.
So I go there, and you live in a very tiny, tiny room, and you have to work 8 hours a day. It's 6 days a week, and you have to scrub the toilets and or inject turkeys or whatever. But
physical work, yeah.
Very physical work. And but the moment I set foot in the country, I felt that that sense of freedom, it stirred something in my soul. I loved the country, absolutely, until this day. It's something special there. I felt this what I write in the book, like this, I don't know what I exactly write, something that this land was holy, no doubt about.
Yeah.
I felt it. It was just for me.
Yeah.
And I had a tremendous experience, first of all, going through the hardship to see what it really is, that, you know, you have no choice. You work, and you cannot choose what you want. You just work straight and hard physical work. And I actually enjoyed doing it. But what was interesting, when I later on went to the desert, which is the most gorgeous place on earth, I went to the Sinai Desert, and...
Yeah.
Where one morning, actually I lived there just with a sleeping bag under a palm tree. That's how you could stay there. And I went there with a friend, and we thought, well, let's just go there for a few months and see what happens. We have no money. I had my little canvas bag, and I thought, we'll see. I'm sure there's something, or maybe we can work somewhere. And of course, when we needed the money, there was this job in a melon factory. But then one morning, when we were off, we went on this journey into the desert, and I think we brought both one bottle of water, and we left. We just followed the sun, and it was gorgeous and fearless and free. We walk off in the desert. After a couple of hours, all of a sudden we take halt, and we think, actually, where are we? I mean, how do we ever get back? And
yeah.
You know, the desert is all sand, and the wind blows away your footsteps. So
there's
no way we could find our way back. And we're looking around us, and stretches of sand and gorgeous dunes and no trail. So we stand there and not knowing what to do. Keep walking. I think it was noon. It was super hot. We had no shoes. We were bare feet. So there we go. And I'm just visualizing, like, oh, how good would that be if we could eat some melons? Oh, would that be nice? And we walk, and it's the most amazing thing. And until this day, you would almost think I make it up, but it's true. Out of nowhere, in the middle of the desert where nobody ever comes. This is bag. We walk close by. At first you think you're hallucinating, but it's true. There's a bag there. Inside are three melons.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So I believe in miracles. Truly, I believe in miracles. And I have a quote in the book which says, from Ben-Gurion, the Israeli prime minister, then he said, one who does not believe in miracles is not a realist.
Wow. Oh, that's hot.
I believe in miracles. True.
Well, Saskia, you have had confirmation of several miracles in your life.
So
how
many.
Could you not believe in miracles?
Oh, and they, yeah, it's kind of a childish thing maybe, but it's also so joyful to. So I always can think there can be a miracle. I mean, when I'm totally, you've read about it, when I was homeless, I had nothing. I walked around in Amsterdam, and I always believe miracles. I'm the one who thinks, well, maybe when I walk around this corner, somebody lost $1,000. You know, I find it.
Right.
I'm the kind of person who believes these things, and yes, they happen. When I would be super sick, I would still believe that there are miracles possible. I wouldn't give up hope quickly, no.
Yeah, the whole book is about that, too, which is why, I mean, the title is so, it's so profound, because you really, I mean, the first thing I said when I was introduced to Saskia, just physically, meaning we, or verbally on the phone, you know, was that, well, you know, your journey, you still have lots of life left. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could easily write, you know, a book a decade, you know, just because somehow you get the feeling Saskia is not slowing down just because she's in America. I mean, I just don't see that. It's not who you are, the wind. I mean, you really
I have accelerated in America.
I'm
in the most accelerated phase now. And I mean, the next book I have already written is Footsteps into Surrender.
Oh,
and
God.
That book is, the subtitle is Walking into Your Dreams on the Bare Feet of Your Soul. I mean, that goes even deeper, where you read my last words of that book are, I want to live fearless and free on the bare feet of my soul.
Yes.
But the bare feet of your soul, it's the unthreaded path. And that has pretty big challenges. And you'll read about that in the next book.
I'm very excited. I'm excited. I really do. I'm very much an adventurist. I'm, you know, junior league compared to you. But meeting you and having the honor of interviewing you and sharing your story, especially the fact that it's a book, I so recommend the book to everybody. It just inspires. It inspires a life outside the box, especially if, you know, most of us have grown up in America and we have not lived in a kibbutz in Israel for a year or seen the Shah's funeral in Egypt or, you know, given birth. I mean, she's given birth to children in Chinese hospitals.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the whole story unfolds in such a way. Now, and here's the exquisiteness of all of this. Saskia is a personal coach or a hypnotherapist. I mean, so all of this wisdom, all of this literal consciousness that she has wonderfully harnessed or gathered within her own being through her experiences, now she can share that as part of who she is to help you find your consciousness. I mean, because I always say, those who experience, really, there is a presence in that being that experience, only through experience can you find that person. I can read about enlightenment all I want, but boy, going to five different countries and living in five different cultures with barely, if any, money, and that is what gives you a validity to say, I know I'm safe and I can help you remember that frequency as well. You know what I'm saying?
And what I hear from many, many readers all over the world, that they say they feel transformed through the book, and I love that because
yes.
they get it. It's like they get it. They're like, yes, I think it's true.
I think
because all the she did that, and it's a true story. So apparently, it's true. You know what? I'm gonna take that leap. I'm just gonna do it
exactly.
because it's proven, not because it's scientifically so. You know, they're numbers, but you go inside the stories. You read between the line. You resonate as if it's you.
Yeah.
You think you're me, and I hear from many people say like. Ah, it's almost you wrote about me. Well, we're all one anyway, so yes,
yeah.
I did. I was there, but you have it. You have faith and trust in you when the last page is turned. I believe so.
It's infused in the story. It's infused in your telling of the story. Just like I said at the beginning of the interview, even in the way where it's not linear. This is not a logic, it's a presence. The book has presence.
Yeah, I always called her, like, I felt like she was a presence. Like, the book wants this and the book wants that. It's like almost like it's a she. She will find, that's really my intention for this book, because I self-published the book only for the reason to get it out there, because who knows Saskia Roel, this Dutch girl in Massachusetts, and I thought, this book needs to be shared. This book needs to go in the world. And I see so many men love the book. I wrote the book for both men and women. I didn't know how it would go. But I want a publisher to pick it up, and I feel like this book will find her way, land in the lap of the right person, who will bring it wherever it needs to go, so many people can benefit from it. It's not about me. It was never about me. I'm the writer, and I did the story, but lived the story. But it's for everybody to ignite courage and make extraordinary choices. Move out of your comfort zone and jump. That's what I want. So yes, I want everybody, or have the book, have her find her way, get to a big publisher and walk in the world.
Oh, I love it. I love that you speak about her as her own creation, because my belief is that we birth many things in life, and not just children. We birth books. We birth radio shows. We birth storylines, plots, people, relate. Everything in life is a creation. Everything. Yeah. Especially when you get to the energetic perspective of it.
Right.
I want to read a quote on your Illuminated Transformation page that is really quite profound and so apropos for you. It's on your homepage, and the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom.
It can always still bring me to tears because, I mean, I'm still in that process myself, of course, as well, because I'm giving birth to bigger parts of myself. Now I've done this, and there comes a moment when the risk to stay tight in the bud is more painful than the risk it takes to blossom. And I just did a 5 series for free empowerment course for people who bought the book, and those people are in tears because they felt so encouraged, like, you know what, it is time. I mean, what holds me back? In my work, what I do, as I use the metaphor of the suitcase and the journey, life is a journey, and what I help people with is to look in your suitcase and look at the baggage of the past, what holds us back, and the baggage of beliefs and the story about who we are and what life is, and to release that. And then you step in your dreams, step in your spotlight. That's my aim. Step in your spotlight. Release the baggage of the past. Fill that suitcase. The workshop was called What's in Your Suitcase?
That's a fabulous
name.
That's
most interesting.
Well, and it's so funny how most people, there's clearly a terminology in America that, what's your baggage?
What's your baggage?
What's your baggage?
But that's my word. You know, it's the easy to say. I call myself a transformational life coach, just to give it a name.
Yes, it's what you are. The book is transformational.
So we look at your baggage, and I help people birth their dreams, and I help women birth their babies. The process from fertility into motherhood and birthing and motherhood, and I work in the same way because what we do is we look at the baggage. What happened in the past, or is there trauma, or what is the experience? What are your beliefs? Beliefs are a key thing here.
Yeah.
What do you believe? And usually beliefs are hidden, but when you get down to the beliefs, that's the core of most unhappiness and you know blockages.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Beliefs are hidden, but they're very clear what's showing up in your life. That's
exactly
what the belief is. But if what's showing up in your life is not what you want, that's when you got to start going within and saying, okay, well, where am I creating this through a belief?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's very empowering to look at your own beliefs.
Oh.
Dare to look in within. Dare to open that suitcase and say, hey, what stops me?
Yeah. No, I believe that, in all honesty, I call that the true quantum leap in consciousness, that when we recognize outside is created first within, then focusing on the mirror is, you know, you're just going to keep hitting glass. Focus within, and the mirror will change. It has to change. If I change within, it will change without.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm just going to play a promotion. And when we come back, though, I would love to talk more about, you know, kind of like the coaching side of Saskia and how everything you've been through. And, I mean, I'm more than happy to go through more stories, too. But I would love to, you know, just talk about the transformation that, you know, because I really am such a... Oh, I'm a diehard for this stuff. I so want people, because once they get that one little piece, the whole puzzle will make sense.
The
whole puzzle will make sense. Okay, I'm going to play the promo, and we'll be right back.
Almeen's classes have no curriculum or specific format. There are no predictable topics. The reason is that this remarkable mystic provides an unparalleled transfiguring experience, most certainly not to be encountered anywhere else on Earth. Almeen has been given the most sacred task of assisting the infinite to usher in Earth's ascension. Everyone in these classes share in executing assignments from the infinite. Information beyond students' wildest dreams pours in, and those who enter the classes as students leave as masters who have silenced the dialogue of their minds. To learn more about this amazing mystic and teacher, visit www.spiritualjourneys.com. Almeen will be presenting for the first time in New York on Friday, September 11th through Sunday, September 13th, 2009. For more information on how to register for this profound class and for hotel accommodations, go to www.almeeninnewyork.com. That's Almeen in NEWYORK.com.
Yay! I really do like that promotion.
I do. I love the music.
Thank you. And you can't believe how many, you know, you go to these, on Blog Talk Radio, you have to use, in fact, I have to honor, I'll find that as we go. You go to this page where it's like all these writers of music, and it's what they call pod safe music. So anybody can use it. You know, it's like a true creative womb, so to speak, of everybody creating different sounds for different reasons. And so, but it's like a plethora. There's like 100,000,000 clips. It's like, wow. How, you know, when I have too many choices, sometimes I just get lost in a decision.
Totally. That's a funny thing of the, you know, I love America. I love to be here. But the funny thing is, I have to say that when we came here, In Holland, you order a coffee, you know, you have a latte or you have a black coffee, and here I went to Starbucks. I had like a million choices, and it made me so uncomfortable at first.
Yes.
Or I go to a store and I want a sandwich. In Holland, you have this sandwich with cheese or ham. You want mayo, you want this, you want that, I whatever, give me something. It would be so, we got so nervous in the beginning, like a million of choices.
It's
like,
quite overwhelming, it definitely is overwhelming.
Truly, we don't realize it here anymore, and now, I want my cappuccino, well, I'm still very easy, it's just a cappuccino, but I know you can have all these different choices with non-fat and whole milk and,
exactly.
Like, give it to me.
Exactly. I'll tell you, when I found it, I was just like, okay, and if I make four more promos, we're all using that music.
So many choices, I get completely lost.
Yes, that's so funny. And yet, you know, boy, living without choice would be detrimental. You know, that I can't even fathom that. I can't. Yeah. And you know, and clearly other parts of the world, you know, there's nowhere near as many choices as we have here. So let us indeed honor that. Okay. I have some wonderful stuff that your beautiful friend Rita shared with me. That let's play with some of these
yeah.
concepts. Okay, so these are important life lessons that Saskia has experienced, and these really are very universal in their scope. I mean, because I often tell my friends, you know, there comes a point in our lives when you shift from wanting the house, the car, the DVDs, the clothes and the shoes, to a sense of something that can only be derived from within. Like it is born and birthed and experienced just within, and I don't quite know where each person's moment where that happens, but I do know when it happens, you can't turn it off. I mean, you just start making decisions because, well, like moving to America with five children and a thriving business in Holland, and you're like, you know, and so I guess, is there a way to nurture that in some way if it's not built yet, or would you just say?
Well, yes, there is, and I say that to everybody, men or women I work with. I say, create a sacred moment every day. This is an easy one, but it's probably the most difficult one for everybody. You wake up, and I tell you how I did it. How I've always done it. I don't know why, but I've always done it because I know that that's the only way for me to keep connected to my divine or my soul connection. And I also tell you the moments where I didn't do it, I get a little crazy. I get completely, you know, I don't know. I'm like the wind. I go wherever the wind goes because I lose my compass. When I wake up, as soon as I open my eyes, I would scan my day and look for that moment, and I'm not talking meditation. Meditation is something else. But look for that moment that you can have completely with yourself. And I would always, I used to drink coffee, I drink chai now. I don't drink coffee anymore. But have that moment with your, for me it's a chai and a scone, or chai and a you know, home baked muffin or something. Have that moment where you sit down with yourself and be completely still, or have that, you feel that connection. Usually I would want to have a pen and paper because I would just maybe write something. Okay. Or I would walk downtown and I had my notebook and I would just sit there and cuddle up, or maybe you can even maybe read a magazine. Usually I wouldn't do it, but just be with yourself. And it can be, I used to have like two moments per day like that, but at least one sacred moment with yourself, because that's the moment you can be still and you can hear yourself. Otherwise, you only hear the outer noise. and you react to all the outer noises. When you be still, you align yourself with you, and you feel into what you feel and what you need. It's nurturing the soul to just be on your own and be alone. And I've asked so many people, because everybody I work with, usually I would work with them with a, you know, an empowerment program of so many weeks,
right.
And they would have that assignment, and I would check in with them, like, did you do it? Did you do it? And, you know, even for guys, sometimes it's difficult, but I said, turn off the radio, turn off your cell phone, turn off your computer.
Right, right. No stimulus but self.
Right there and see what happens. But it's not like once a week you do it. Do it every day. And one time it's at 9, one time it's at 10, doesn't matter. But have that sacred moment.
And you know what I love about that advice? You don't need money. You don't need to have to go to a special school. You don't need, quote unquote, the teacher to be there. You know, and what I'm going through is the excuses why most people say they can't do it. I'm too busy. I don't have time. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I mean, these moments when you tune in are really the genuine guidance of the moment.
Right. It's such richness there. It's so rich inside of you, and it's, you let it unfold then, otherwise you never get down there.
Oh, exactly, exactly. So you're only skimming the top. And in the top, boy, you're going to be bobbing around like a cork in an ocean. I mean, there's just no grounding to it.
There is no grounding, and I have experienced it in the first years. I have a hard time in the summer to do it because I have all my kids home, and everybody needs to go to different places, and mom's around, and my work is at home. So, you know, I'm there. And I forgot to keep my sacred moments. And at the end of the summer, I would be so crabby and so not okay, not knowing where I was, who I was, because I lost myself. I lose myself.
Wow. Well, that's hot. Okay. Another important lesson that you wrote is that we may struggle with detours, but we'll always be guided. I guess that would be that, right? That would.
One of the lessons is roadblocks and detours are opportunities.
Let's talk about that. Yes.
And there will always be times when your life goes off course. But I say pay attention because there's something to learn. Mm. And you're being led to clear the way to live an authentic life. And I think there's such potent moments if we turn around. You lose it. If you see it as an opportunity, it's like, you know, there's a lesson there. And sometimes, I'm sure you can relate to that, there's a roadblock or a detour, and at first you wonder, like, oh, why is this happening to me? And you don't want it there because you want to have this smooth sailing through.
Right.
And it's tough and it's hard. And then as soon as you start seeing the opportunity for growth, I mean, detours is an opportunity for growth. That's just it.
You know, it's so funny. As we speak about this, my hands are buzzing. Like, just speaking about, because growth is, in my personal opinion or perception, more life force energy in my being. Where I, releasing a block means I live deeper.
That is so true. And releasing, and that's what I see in my coaching and my healing practice, is when you release a block, people, it's so deep. And that's a life-changing moment sometimes.
Yeah, well, because I think if what we desire is the car and the house and the toys and the shoes, it's what I call the horizontal life. When we start wanting the virtues of the soul, that's when we start getting vertical. Because it's not that you're moving into like what society would deem successful. You're moving into that which is a frequency and a space within the soul that's eternal. I mean, you're like tapping into the eternalness that follows you lifetime after lifetime after lifetime.
You know, and then... the synchronicity turn up, and it's actually, I think it's almost weird we have a name for it, because we're so probably out of tune most of the time, so we call this something so special.
Right.
It's a miracle of synchronicity. I think basically life is one synchronicity after another, if we would live in tune. And
yeah,
I'm not always living
agree.
In tune, but so then I love synchronicities. But it should be a normal way of life. Like everything is connected. Everything is a synchronicity. If we're totally in tune with that inner voice, inner compass, then of course one thing happens after another, and you'll be led constantly.
Yeah, yeah. And a teacher of mine basically said the answer will be asked. The answer will be had before the question's even asked. You know, in other words, there would be no want or desire because it would be showing up before you even know to want it, because the flow, it's living in pure isness.
And
what's so interesting is that we see this on, you know, certain, I see it like in the movies, portrayed on in certain movies, and I always say to people, if it can be thought of in the movies, it can be experienced in real life. Because there is no difference between imagination and real, or what we call reality, other than a density. But meaning they're both real. They're just the way we experience them is different. But people are like, you know, oh, that's just your imagination. You know, don't pay any attention to that. It's like, oh, my God. No, stop. Hmm. Stop, drop, and roll.
You
must pay attention to that.
totally. And the imagination, I mean, that's our tool. If we can imagine, then we can create it into being.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, Saskia, in this country, you can't believe how polarized we become in the left brain. Well, I mean, of course you can. You've been here 8 years, long enough to know. Like the whole educational system, music, art, all the things that are creative and can't be graded, so to speak, A, B, C, or D, the minute there is any kind of financial situation going on within the school, it's the first things that are cut.
Yeah, then drama is cut. I was just horrified when I heard that. My son, you know, had so much fun in drama, and he played Oliver in the Oliver play,
and
oh, gosh, it was so wonderful. And then I heard there was this cut, and the drama teachers got. I mean, all the kids who joined that show, it was their life.
Right.
So important. But another funny thing was to talk about, you know, the art and all that.
Okay.
The creative side. When we first came here, I went to one of the parents' nights, and there was this very old-fashioned teacher. And we came from Montessori school, so that's very, you know, the creativity of the child and the uniqueness and very stimulated, so very free. So this was, you know, this class
very different.
In kindergarten, very different. So I'm fine, you know, that's all good for them to experience. So this teacher said to me, she said it in this way, I'm really learning the kids, and she showed what she learned. They had to draw how they draw inside the lines, and I thought, oh, I'm all about coloring outside the lines.
And she's all excited, huh?
She was all excited, and of course she meant well, but that was how she was teaching the children in a way that they had to listen. They weren't allowed to speak. They weren't allowed to move. It was anyway, but beautifully, my son, I asked my son, he was six probably, and I said, Sam, how is the teacher? I said, is the teacher kind? I asked it in that way.
Right.
And he said, what do you mean? Of course she's kind.
Oh,
everybody's
wow.
kind. And I thought, yeah, of course.
Wow, and he saw that.
Yeah. He's very, very beautiful, beautiful enlightened being.
Yeah. God bless the children. They really, I'm not saying that your children aren't, you know, I'm in the business, so to speak, 17 years. There is a miraculous thing. I mean, I don't believe they have the same DNA anymore that we have. I don't know if it could be found through, you know, testing, but, you know, it's like,
I agree.
There's something extraordinary happening, and it's like, there's a sense of them that, you know, it's like everybody's talking about, like the Doreen Virtues and all these other people, that they have a sense of their heritage, and I'm talking galactic and cosmetic or And being around them, you just feel so expanded and so unconditionally loved. It's like,
yes,
you know, to not have children on my own, I mean, that's why I had to nanny for the last 17.
Yeah.
They would literally just, they would be my shining stars, you know, because growing up in America is challenging, but it's so ironic. I grew up in this side of the country, we have Fairfield County. On the West Coast, there's Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And you would think, oh, my God, you grew up in, you know, the wealthiest county in America. Lucky you. And it's like, but what's so funny is once you reach a point where the goal is no longer stuff, it's like being in a very unhappy, decorated prison. You know, I mean, it's like there's lots of shiny things all around, but from a sensitive point of view, there is a sadness and a genuine
yeah.
anger that I've traveled a little bit. I lived in Buffalo, New York for a while, and I saw what, you know, genuine people who don't have more money than God.
Yeah.
What they live like, and I mean, Saskia, it was so fascinating to me that the joy of just sitting around together, drinking a beer and talking three generations thick, you know, grandparents, mm-hmm. parents, and kids, and you know, their families lived within three block radiuses, and there was a unity and a sense of joy from such an earthly, you know, salt of the earth type of people, genuine.
I believe it because it's when I look at my own life, I felt I was so free because I didn't, especially first and all the outer traveling, I didn't have any stuff with me. I had no baggage, right?
Literally.
And then I thought that was what made me so happy because that I thought, oh, probably because I don't carry any stuff. Then, of course, I start looking at my inner baggage and start, you know, freeing that up.
Right.
But truly, stuff weighs us down. I mean, emotional
yeah.
stuff, but material stuff as well.
Yeah, it's almost like this, you know, I keep going, like the big lie. That,
yeah.
And you know, to tell people that who genuinely haven't had this awakening within, I mean, it's like they'll fight you tooth and nail saying, you know, don't tell me it's better to live in Africa starving than Fairfield County. And I'm like, you know, obviously two extreme polarities. But I'm like, you know, you guys just don't know how unhappy you are. I would love to take a video camera and show all these people walking down these streets of these mansions and beautiful stores, and they don't smile.
Yeah.
You know, it fascinated me from a sensitive point of view, going, you know, gosh, shouldn't you at least be happy you have the stuff?
Yeah, but I think, you know, if there's this void inside, you keep wanting to fill it up from the outer side.
Yes,
and
well
as
said.
As soon as you have the awareness and the consciousness that it's all inside of us. That's there is no void. And if you discover the treasure within, then, you know, the outer stuff, you know, and it can be wonderful to live in a beautiful home and have a beautiful yard and, you know, all that. But that's not what makes you happy.
It's secondary.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it's secondary. I would love somebody now to do my yard and have it look all pretty. But it's secondary. I mean, it's funny that the inside of our house is really pretty. I think it's really pretty with, you know, how I perceive that with my own curtains I brought from Paris and I sewed them all myself. And we have all these colorful colors we painted on the walls and all of that.
Yeah.
The outside, I don't care that much. But a lot of neighbors here, their outside looks really pretty. And as soon as you go in the house, you're like, ooh, what a mess.
Yeah, and you can feel it.
Kind of metaphoric. Like.
Exactly, metaphor. Exactly. I mean, it's cold.
The yard is neatly trimmed and, you know, it looks
yeah.
like perfect
yeah.
and lawn is mowed and, you know, with us, we don't always keep track of everything on the outside. But the inside is wonderful, harmonious, beautiful. But it's interesting. It's just interesting.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the outer doesn't fill us up. That is something where when you become aware of it, and definitely when you sit with yourself and you listen to your own needs and who you are and what you want in life, then you can start filling up that void and nurture that
Absolutely.
Beautiful place inside.
Absolutely. It really is. It's amazing how everything that's happening on the planet right now is almost, from my perspective, pointing to within. You know, if I tell my friends, if things are leaving your life, let them go. Don't hold on to stuff that, I mean, and I'm talking mostly what it is people are losing homes, they're losing businesses, and I see them, you know, in this deep, intense struggle to keep themselves above water when it's clear between the 80s, 90s, and you know, this first part of this decade, money got a little wackadoodle. People just started building on credit and investing in places, and the truth of the matter is that world is collapsing. I mean, I believe energetically that illusion is running its course. It's no longer supported literally energetically. And that's as one door closes, the birthing of our souls is right here at our fingertips. That you can live in you can downsize and not worry about Gucci and Milano Blahnik, whatever, and have a joy and a health and a relationship within your family that is, oh my God, deep beyond. You know, everybody playing their iPods and nobody speaking to each other in all your designer duds.
You know, it's funny you say that, because when we left, we were really on a high. We were on a high, and we lived in a beautiful, wealthy village, and we left, and we started all over from nothing, from scratch, but we started to build our inner, you know, our inner strength and our inner account, and all our friends were at that point building their bank account.
Yeah.
So now, 8 years later, the bank accounts have collapsed. I mean, there's nothing there anymore, and it's very scary. And in the meanwhile, you know, we've been building and building through a lot of challenges and roadblocks we've encountered in this road to strengthen that faith and to strengthen, you know, the inner and feel the treasure within, and so that can come to blossom, you know, our talents, our unique gifts, like what are we looking for? And that is a very rich place. I mean, richer than
castles and because nothing, when you know you're everything, you there's nothing left to lose. You can't lose anything. You can only gain. I mean,
That's a powerful statement. When you know you can't lose anything, that's and you cannot fail either.
Exactly.
Fail.
Yes, it's.
I ask people in my coaching. I say, what would you do or be if you couldn't fail? And it's a bigger question than the old question was always, I think people would ask, what would you do if you had enough money? Well, truly, people have enough money, they don't do what they want anyway.
They don't.
So, I mean, and I have a tremendous respect for people who have money. Don't get me wrong on that.
I think it's
phenomenal and it's fantastic. But if you talk about, does that bring fulfillment? Partly, but not the whole piece. But if where would you go or be if you couldn't fail? That's where you want to look into. What would you do or be or have then? Because failure is a big piece.
Let me ask you a question.
We don't walk the path because we are afraid we fail.
No, and it's so funny because, you know, one of my cliches that I have for myself is that I'm failing my way to success.
You have to, right?
Well, you know, because I never really get it the way I want it the first time, but as a creator, I just keep tweaking. I'm just tweaking volume up, down, sideways, add a little salt, take a little pepper out.
It's true. it's true. And, you know, mastery. I thought the other day, you know, life is really mastery. Mastery
yeah.
of your choices, mastery of your awareness. It's all mastery. But mastery means we're mostly off course. When a plane, mastery means to get on course constantly. And what they say, when a plane flies from Boston to California, it's off course 90.9% of the time. So it constantly goes, has to, you know, master.
Readjust.
You have readjust.
Yeah.
And that's probably life. It's mastery. We are off course, basically. And we
yeah.
constantly have to get back on course, And that's a beautiful thought.
Yeah, no, and you describe it beautifully as well, because when people, they think they're going to draw a line in the sand, have a moment, okay, now I'm here. It's like, no, this is, you know, it's an everyday, every moment decision. What do you choose? What do you choose? And you can follow your gut. You can choose not to follow your gut, which can still take you on course when you recognize, okay, now I know when I don't follow my instincts, that's not good. Now, that alone is a lesson that's worth doing once.
Yeah.
I mean, just like your son said when he heard the voice not to go in the woods, he goes in, trouble hits.
Oh.
It's yeah. like learning through, but meaning there's no shame, no harm, no foul from that. That is, we learn by experiencing, and the key to it is to be aware that we did not follow the instinct. Otherwise, we just make that decision over and over and over and over. And then we
yeah.
go, I'm a victim. It's like, no, you're not a victim. You're just not aware of your choices.
You know, it's as I have one, what I say, one of the very powerful practices is, you know, to know the power of choice. We have the power of choice. We have free will. There are no right or wrong choices. Only the outcome is different. But to know that we have a choice, we don't realize it often. We have a choice, and sometimes I think, you know, people can say, well, I have no choice. I've lost my home. I've lost this. I've lost that. I've lost that. Still,
yes.
there is the choice of attitude.
Yes.
And if you choose the attitude of gratitude, you see what happens.
Yes.
Miracles happen.
Well, because attitude is kind of like the buffer that takes us through life. You know, in other words, things happen in life. I mean, things are, you know, we can definitely consciously choose, and miracles can happen. And it seems like there's almost like what I would call, there's an apprentice stage, because until every cell in your body radiates this trust and this knowing, which is definitely possible in the twinkling of an eye as well as over many lifetimes. I mean, it's really when we choose to
yeah.
surrender that this really is the truth. But as we're gaining that momentum, I'll give you, I always try to, I think stories, people, they learn better from a story. Okay, when my apartment got robbed, which I basically knew the night before that was going to happen and prepared myself for it mentally, emotionally, I should say. After it happened, my friends were all like, you know, oh, okay, there it is. You know, it's not a safe place anymore, Goldie. See, it's not safe. What you do is not safe. And I said to them, I go, okay, no, here's my choices. I can say I'm not safe because my friend told me in the area that I lived in, if someone robs you and you interrupt that rob or that act, they'll come back and finish it. And
yeah.
so I said, okay, so my attitude is I can be afraid, listen to everybody around me and start locking doors and cower, so to speak, because that's how it felt to me. Cower under the covers and go, please don't hurt me. I'm helpless. Please don't hurt me. Or I can say, you know what? The people that came in that took my stereo and took my subwoofer and whatever else they took, they needed that to put some winter clothes on their kids because it's a really rough time right now. And they didn't
right.
know what else to do because they tried going to welfare and they tried going to the state, and the state wasn't there for them, and they're panicking, and they just don't want their children to freeze. And it was like, I mean, I literally chose to believe that.
Yeah.
And it made, oh, I mean, it was almost like, I, if they came back, it was going to be like, here, go feed your kids. you don't have to take. I'll give it to you. And they never did come back.
Yeah, it gave you a peace of mind.
That's exactly what it was. Yes, Trish.
There's someone in the chat room who has a question.
Oh, please. Okay.
He wrote, he definitely wants to see the book. Will there be a parenting book? That would be great. And he wants to know, or she wants to know, if there's any chance to reparent your 26-year-old daughter.
Ah, take it away, Saskia.
There is not a parenting book, but many people have asked me for a parenting book, so maybe that can be in the works. Well, I think to parent, maybe you wouldn't call it to reparent a 26-year-old, but I think there is opportunity daily. There is in every moment an opportunity to sit down and talk with your child and be open and be honest and maybe about maybe choices that were good or were not so good. And look each other in the eye, and you know, first of all, I would always like absolutely tell your child what the beautiful things are, and
mm-hmm.
what the gift is, and what then maybe the challenge is, and what the challenge maybe of this life. I mean, I just imagine something, but maybe there's a challenge, and where the two of you have to handle that challenge, and because this child is now 26. It's more, you know, almost more friend to friend.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Talk. But again, a parent is always, there's this emotional involvement of a parent. And basically the parent always wants the best for the child. Always. Because the parent loves the child. And sometimes we become overprotective or we want to steer it in one direction and the child walks off in a different direction. But again, there's opportunity to sit down and be honest and honor the beautiful things and then say, this is, you know, maybe we can work on this.
Right, right. Because what I would say is, I mean, just to add to that is, you know, the best way to parent or nurture anybody in our circle is to be the living example of that which you want to see. If what you see in your child, you know, is that they're not as compassionate as you think they should be compassionate. You know, I always say, and this can be not even just from a child, from, you know, from anybody that's in your inner circle who is your reflection. It's always a reflection of self. So ultimately, the way we teach or parent or nurture life itself is instead of trying to correct the outer being, this is what they call Ho'oponopono. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Yeah.
But it's you take it within your own being and say, that which I see as a lack in another, I will correct in myself. Okay. You know, it's all reflection. Hello?
Yeah. No, I can totally relate to that. It's all reflection, and I mean, I can practice with 5 kids here. Oh, there's enough to practice. It's just true. Be the example, and that's not always easy, but it's truly what you want to see in your kid. Reflect that, and it works. If you want your child to be kind, be kind, and show that. Be compassionate. Show your compassionate side. And
well, you know what's interesting? I think I just tripped up because you know what? I was noticing the negative, and that tripped you up, Saskia. I can feel it.
What, the negative?
Yeah. Well, me noticing the negative, and you're kind, but I was like, wow, I just lost the connection. Like, but that I lost that connection because I focused on, you know, this woman seeing the negative in her children, and I can tell you don't do that.
No, I mean, of course, there can be behavior which isn't good, but I see I come from the goodness of the child.
Yeah.
Like this beautiful soul is on a journey to learn, and I'm the guide.
That's a great analogy.
this where I have my lantern and I kind of say, you know, this is the path that Brett is the path you want to walk, and you can go off course like the mastery story, but then get back on course.
Yeah.
And here, this is your path, go back on course. But I come from where I see the light in them and I don't see the darkness. Let that light shine even brighter. And how can we ignite that light? And I'm not saying, you know, for everybody it can be different and children can get off course completely. But it's hard to speak to about a child. I don't know what's going on with the 26-year-old, but, you know, I see the light in the child.
I can feel that. I feel that with
next
you.
To that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're a remarkable woman. Mm. You are. You are. I enjoy having your presence on my show very much. Yes. Yes. Because I have a clarity.
Life is exciting. Yeah.
Pardon?
Life is just an exciting journey, and you know, we're all on this journey.
Mm. It's so true. I mean, it is. You know, I always laugh when friends of mine with kids, or you know, even sometimes the kids I'm babysitting for, they'll go, "I'm bored," and I'll look at them and go, "What? I mean, in this energy and frequency, I got 200 million things." Twirling around my entire being, I don't know, you know, which way is up sometimes. And you're bored? It's like, wow, breathe. Sit and breathe. I promise you something will come up.
No, and I think the good thing is to be bored. Sometimes I say that's very good to be bored, because then, you know, they're not behind the TV or they don't do a computer game. I mean, we're not enough bored. We should be bored to figure out a new possibility, I guess.
Oh, indeed. There you go. Right. Accept things that it is a momentarily pause or something, a void.
Yeah. So then you start thinking, how can I be creative here?
Yeah, no, indeed. Indeed.
Yeah. Now, I wish I was bored sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you, I think there's a part of me that understands, it's almost like, because, I mean, I'll be in the woods. I spend quiet time with myself 5 or 6 days a week when if my health is right and, you know, things are going well. Like last summer and spring, I was in the woods almost every single day, 3 to 4 hours a day. It was just like this incredible journey of like my own healing.
Yeah.
And I'm sensing that's to some degree coming to an end, and I'm a little nervous about it. You know, because I'm always thinking, I want to work with you, Saskia.
Yeah, come.
I'm serious.
We dig up some good stuff.
Exactly, because I just
dare you. I dare you, Goldie.
Oh,
so
those be powerful words, my friend. I love it.
Yeah. No,
indeed. Indeed.
No, I dare people, and I think people come to me when I work with people, I always ask them, are you in for small stuff or big stuff? And the reason I'm asking is I'm very passionate about big stuff, big leaps, and there's nothing wrong with small stuff, but then there's many, many people out there who probably wonderful with that. But if you want to take a leap and fly, then, you know, if you just want to jump from one stair, then you don't come to me. If you want to really, you know, jump off that cliff and start flying, that's where I come in, because I'm very passionate about that. And I have enormous trust in my clients that they can fly.
Yeah, no, so, I'm very attracted to
everything
you just said.
And I dare, I mean, I'm not talking
am attracted
about you, but I dare, definitely I dare people. And when I work with people, I'm very confrontive, very, you know, then we're going in deep. And sometimes it's almost like I'm very compassionate, very nice, but I see it as I'm opening the cage and I have that piece of cheese, you know, when you want to catch a mouse, all of you have that. And I know I open the cage, and I know exactly where I want them to be. And, you know, we're all nice, and I'm asking questions. And then all of a sudden, they're in the cage, and boom, the cage closes. And I ask that deadly question. Nowhere else to go, but it's so true. And it's the truth that hits them, and then they get that inside, like, oops. But at the same time, they have the cheese.
Wow, that's a powerful statement, which you just created visually.
Yeah.
That but see, it comes from because you know. You don't hope, you don't wish, you
don't
pray.
No, I don't hope.
You know.
I don't talk about hope. I've said that once to someone, and I wasn't sure if that, you know, if it was too bold. But hope, of course, hope is wonderful, and it's a direction. But basically, hope is for the hopeless, because hope is like, you know, that might be a bad outcome. I'd rather speak about trust.
Right.
Trust. That's
trust.
The difference.
Yeah, there
hope.
Is a difference.
It's
absolutely.
The same as you try. You don't try. If you try, try is nothing. You either do it, but you know, don't try.
Yeah, no, I have
tried
said
to
that.
Run 5 times a week. No, don't try.
Yeah.
You do it or you
choose
don't.
It. Just choose it. I could not agree. And it's funny because there really is an energy difference in try and do and hope
yeah.
and trust.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I
and I
feel
add
that.
The no matter. I add the no matter what factor, because I when I wrote the book, there were a million excuses for me not to do it, and I had listened to them, and I thought it has the quality of one day. People said, "Oh, you got to write a book. You got to write the stories down because they're so inspirational." And I thought, okay, yeah, one day I will.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, I was confronted, like, okay, I will write this book. And I said to myself, okay, now you're going to do it no matter what. And if you include in whatever you do, the no matter what factor, you do it. There's no trying anymore. So
right.
Every morning I got up at 4, and that's extremely difficult for me.
I get that.
Yeah, so that is just quite a task. So to do that and have no excuses, I mean, 5 kids, a husband who travels, 8 animals, you name it. So there were many ways out where everybody in the world would understand that, no, Sophia, I cannot write a book. Of course you can. No time. I did not want to hide behind, I have no time. There is an abundance of time. We just don't know how to manage it. So I sleep most of the time, probably so many hours. So let's be creative. So then I did it. And guess what happens then? If you just get into the no matter what factor, no, and you don't even go there, that you can maybe not do it. That's very powerful. And practice that. I mean, if I think of something new, then I have to tell myself no matter what. Otherwise, I get away. I can make up excuses that, you know, there are many valid excuses.
Yeah, well, the master says no matter what.
Yeah, no matter what, do it.
Do it.
What is that? Nike, do it.
Yeah, just do
but
it.
But I would say no matter what, just do it.
I like that even because, I mean, that acknowledges that there could be, you know, mountains, speed bumps, challenges.
There are.
Yeah.
That's life. There are speed bumps, mountains, it's all there. That life holds all that. But when you say no matter what, then you're really committed. And that's...
Yeah.
If we're committed, then, you know, miracles happen.
The universe shows up.
Universe shows up.
Yeah.
The universe shows up, and what I find what I'm practicing now is to completely befriend the unknown. To say, you know what, the unknown, it's fine. And the unknown is a very safe place. And the unknown actually holds the potentiality of miracles. That's where miracles show up, because you go in the unknown. And what I've experienced for myself, I'm pretty fearless. I love the unknown. It's fine. But now I get practice, because for my daughter, for example, she's 17. She goes off to Holland within the month. She's there. We do not have a house. We do not have housing for her. She's not yet enrolled in a college. There's more unknowns than you can possibly think of. And since I'm not afraid of the unknown for myself, universe shows up, and there's all these unknowns for my daughter. And I'm a mom, so I care deeply. And I've had nights that I couldn't sleep. And then I thought, you know what? I am going to practice to tell myself, even if it's for my daughter, the unknown is a very joyful, safe place. And now I'm practicing that. And I tell you, I have peace of mind now because I over and over repeat that to myself. Because, of course, I go off track immediately. I can go, whoops, where again is she going? Oh, no, we don't know where she's going because we don't have any housing for her yet because you don't live on campus and all of you. You've got to find a room for yourself on your own. You'll live there. So, you know. But
okay,
I'm practicing.
That's profound.
The universe will show up.
Of course.
Shows up. I have to believe that for my daughter and my children because, you know, but I'm challenged.
Yeah, but life is rich. I like when you say it. Life is full and rich when you literally consciously make the choice. I mean, the unknown is like 99.9% of life.
This is
a big, vast space that you've just allowed to come in safely.
Yeah.
It's
all unknown. We didn't know that Michael Jackson would die.
Absolutely.
Totally unknown. But that was in the stars or however that was going to happen. But and everybody's shocked. I'm shocked. It's like, what? And I mean, life is life and death. How can we not even think about it?
I know.
It's so weird. But yes, we think we know, and actually, when we look, it's so interesting. When we see this pie, it's probably not even a third where we say, okay, this is what I know, and then there's another third, and I know that I don't know, because
right.
I know I don't know everything. But then, the 75 or 85% of the pie is I don't know that I don't know.
Right.
That's the interesting part.
Yes.
That's where we learn. That's the growth.
That is where we learn. And that's all, I mean, and the reason why that's a miracle, the miracles are there, is because the miracle comes from a space we couldn't even intend. Because we didn't know it. You know, I mean, but that's, when you can get excited about that space when you put the spin on it that it's safe.
Exactly. When I walked in the desert and I found a bag of melons, that's a miracle. I didn't know. How could I know it's there? When I needed money to buy this house and I declared to the universe, well, there must be some rich people who can lend us the house. Well, I think 8 or 12 hours later, the whole amount of money was there because somebody called up and out of the blue it came.
Yeah, no, that's phenomenal.
Well, you can name it. It's when we were in the Ivory Coast in Africa, all of a sudden I need money and people give me golden rings so I can sell it on the market there.
Yeah.
That's all, you know. I could know that I couldn't possibly dream this.
Yeah. And yet here
but
you are
life,
experiencing it. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, it's just such a powerful
But we have
way
to remind,
to
you know, constantly remind ourselves, you know, I'm now practicing the unknown is very safe, and I can almost get excited about that now.
Yeah.
Because I know a few weeks ago, not for myself, but for my daughter, I would feel very fearful. And now I'm excited to see when all of a sudden that apartment will be there.
Of course. And what's interesting, though, is sharing it with your daughter, this is ultimately going to be your daughter's manifestation. It will be your daughter's faith.
And my daughter learned that things will show up. My daughter has no concern at all. She's like, well, it probably will be so.
There you go. She sounds pretty cash.
I'm like, shouldn't you worry a little bit here? Hello. But no.
Well, but her mom never taught her to worry, so where would that come from?
That's true. So as soon, you know, the difficult part here is because we've lived there, and the saying is, like, it's extremely, extremely difficult to find housing. So she comes from a place of total trust. Like, of course I find my own apartment, and I want to give her a sense of reality, but I know as soon as I will say, well, it's very, very hard to find housing in Amsterdam, she'll look at me and say, well, don't say that, Mom, because
of
you manifest
course.
That.
Right.
So
right.
In my own family, I can come up with those terms.
Yeah,
although
well,
I think it's sometimes like, in terms of reality.
This is what happens when you write a book on faith.
Exactly. Oh, you get slapped in the face with it.
Oh, but in such a beautiful way. Come on, that's just phenomenal. Because I think what's interesting is you get to watch your daughter become the great manifester that her, you know, you're passing on the legacy of literally the legacy of miracles, of the world being a playground where there's no fear of culture, there's no fear of the unknown. I mean, these are, in my personal opinion, these are what the fairy tales were written about, you know, in, you know, the Cinderella stories and the Snow Whites. I mean, it was all about a world being just open and creative and safe and nourishing and nurturing. You know, it's like...
You know, I thought actually somebody brought it up and thought it would be good because I can see, because she's for 8 years here, and I really wanted her going off to college, read my book, because I want her to give that sense of like the world is an exciting place. And I thought for college kids or for high school graduates,
okay,
to give it to colleges or schools, when, you know, they graduate, it would be great because you instill that there is, as we say it here in our little village, there's more to the world when you go over the bridge. Because, you know, we live on this isle. We don't even go off the bridge. They go to the mall, and that's like, whoa, that's far. So you want to instill, I like to instill that in every teenager. Explore the world. Go out. Travel. You know.
Absolutely. I mean, and genuinely, you do practice what you preach, my friend, and you're exquisite. You're exquisite. We have 5 minutes left.
Oh, wow. The time flies.
I told you!
That's so wonderful. It's timeless. I mean, when you're in connection, it's just timeless.
It's the truth. I really love what we share, because it is when it's a conversation just about, you know, a person being, not you know step 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, you got to do this and this in order to get this and this. You know, I've never resonated with a structure like that. I've always resonated with, are you a living example of what you're teaching? And if you are, come on my show. That's
interesting, because somebody at one of the radio shows said, can she give the how-to steps?
And oh, my.
I said, I'm not the how-to girl. I'm the how do you do it girl.
Exactly.
Like, you want to know, how do I do it? What do I practice? And I said, I can give you practices. Well, I mean, practice the what I believe in, the practice of choice, you know, the practice of awareness, the practice of living from your heart, the practice of going out of your comfort zone, the practice of surrender, ultimately. That I can talk about, but how to, it means you look for the end destination, and it is all about the process and the practice within that process. But, yeah, I understand what you say.
Yeah, well, because, you know, I truly believe if you live it, the how-to is exactly what you just said. It's a daily, you know, it's the plane getting off course. And the simple how-to is when you feel bad, oh, okay, let's start breathing, become aware, sit still, and gently bring ourselves back to the space that doesn't feel bad.
Yeah.
That's one choice.
So,
you know, so you've been fantastic. I hope you'll come on again. And again, and again.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because I really, the whole chat room was definitely, if I can, what I'll do is I'm going to copy and paste what, they were quiet. Just so you know, the chat room is normally very, very active. Like if I have readers and things of that nature, the chat room tonight was really very conscious, very quiet, listening to our conversation. And I can just sense that when you touched people tonight, you touched me, and you touched the chat room people, and we've only scratched the surface of you. I mean,
I would love to be back, but maybe we can tell the listeners where, because there's only one place at this moment where you can buy the book if they are interested in the book.
Okay, they are interested in the book. The woman who asked the question,
Okay, well, that's www.suitcase. fullofaith.com.
Okay.
That's
okay.
It's on Amazon, but don't go straight to Amazon. Just go to www.suitcasefullofaith.com because the pricing is better and you can get, you know, all other goodies there. So
there you have it. And actually, she's been putting it up, Suitcase Full of Faith, as well as your...
Yeah, Illuminated Transformation.
That's
it's about my work. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, we have 90 seconds.
Ooh!
You are...
It was wonderful.
Thank you, Saskia. Thank you. And thank Rita for putting us together.
Great.
And I will... I will be in touch. I accept the dare.
Okay.
Okay, because
like I said, I dare you, absolutely.
And I will talk to you privately because there's some things I would have to work out, but if you're open to it, I am honored.
Totally, yes.
Okay, because you ride a wave that I resonate with your wave, and I want to be fearless. I am fearless. I want that.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm all in.
Oh, you're incredible.
I get you in that mouse trap. But you have the teeth, and then later I open the gates and you walk freely.
Oh, definitely. No, I'm telling you, I like teachers like you. I resonate, and it's been exquisite this evening. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Well, thank you, and thank everybody for creating the circle. It was an absolutely honor to be here and delightful to be in your energy, absolutely.
Oh, Saskia, namaste, my friend.
Namaste, I was thinking that.
Yeah, and namaste to the chat room. I think we're off the air. But thank you. Thank you so much, I will call you in a few days.
Okay, all right.
Thank you
so
much.
Bye-bye, Goldie. Have a wonderful night.
Blessings to you, Saskia. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now.